In last week's share, we learned a few important rules about milking and fleshing, transferring taste from one to the other. One rule was that if the utensil, the pot, or the spoon, or the fork, is not what's called a ben yomi, if it was not used within the last 24 hours with hot milking or fleshing, it will never answer the other type of food. If I have a pot of meat cooking on the stove and I take a milchig, a spoon, which was not used in the last 24 hours for hot milchig, and I stir the pot of meat, the meat will be fine. The spoon will have to be kashed, but the meat is fine. That was one rule. There's the difference between ben yomai and ein ben yomai. Second rule that we learned about is if, let's say, we have two foods which are cold piece of cheese and a cold piece of meat, and they touch each other, so then either we need to wash them off or maybe scrub them, and it could be if it's really greasy, you gotta shave down a little from the surface. But there's no real transfer of any taste or bleeds or flavor going from one to the other because they're both cold. And this is even if I go ahead and take a milchig knife, which is clean and scrubbed, so there's no milchig on the knife, and cut a cold piece of meat, nothing at all, nothing will happen. Even if the knife was used within the last 24 hours for hot milchig, where right now it's cold and clean and the meat is cold, no transfer. When it comes to a davach harif is something sharp. Davach harif is the exception to both of these rules. When there's a davach harif, something which is a sharp food, then there's no difference whether the utensil, the pot, is a ben yomei or any ben yomei, makes no difference. If the davach harif is being warmed up in the pot, which is, let's say, the davach harif is being warmed up in a fleshig pot, whether that pot was used within the last 24 hours or not, fleshig bleis are being transferred now from the pot into the davach harif, and the davach harif rejuvenates. The davach harif has the power to make that stale taste fresh, and therefore the davach harif will have a din of a fleshig, like a fleshig of food, which was cooked, or a part of food that was cooked in a fleshig pot. Or, for example, if, let's say, I take a knife, and with pressure, when I use a knife or sometimes even a fork, if I put pressure on the davach harif, even though it's cold and the knife is cold, but the pressure of the knife transfers taste from the knife into the davach harif. Therefore, if one cooked the sharp food in a fleshig pot that has not been used for 24 hours, or cut the sharp food with a knife which had not been used for hot fleshig in the last 24 hours, the sharp food then absorbs fleshig taste, and according to Ashkenazim, the whole food is considered fleshig and cannot be eaten with milchig. However, if one did cook this, make this sharp food did become fleshig, you cannot eat it with milchig, but it will not make the person fleshig that they have to wait now 6 hours. That it won't do. If, let's say, the sharp food was cut with a fleshig knife and then fried in a milchig pan, so it's very possible that now it has fleshig bleis from the knife, even though it was cold, and it has milchig bleis from the pan. And a shayla has to be asked by a rav, whether what's being cooked is kosher or treif. Now, it's a question amongst the poskim, what foods are considered sharp? What foods do we consider sharp? There are poskim that consider onions, garlic, sharp. However, in my opinion, it's only things which are really sharp, very sharp, and in order to eat them, it needs to be eaten with bread, or you need to take a drink of water right after. Therefore, in my opinion, onions are not considered sharp foods. garlic also. Maybe if you have a sharp chareen, a real sharp chareen, that could burn, that could clear out your system. So that maybe that has to be eaten with something else. Or if you have hot pepper. And so that those two things may be considered a sharp food. If you have a vinegar, not all vinegars are sharp. There's some vinegars which are very sharp. Usually the vinegars that we have are not sharp, but there are very sharp vinegars which may be considered a dav charif. If I have mayonnaise or something or some kind of food that has mixed into a vinegar, that once it's mixed with other food, it's not going to be considered charif. Now, I just want to go over so the two rules that by charif is either was warmed up, the sharp food was warmed up in a milchig or fleshig plan, or get the dinner milchig that cannot be eaten with the other type, or fleshig and cannot be eaten with milchig, or make it fleshig. Cutting with a knife, the duchkut sakin, it's called the pressure of the knife, creates a bliya to go out from the knife into the dav charif. Okay. Now, another area where we find that dav charif is different, something which is sharp is different, that is, there's something called kavush. Kavush means soaked. If I would take two foods, and let's say one is dairy and one is a piece of cheese and a piece of meat, and soak it in cold water, just leave them both in the cold water for 24 hours, that will cause a transfer of taste from one into the other, and they both cannot be eaten. If the liquid that it's being soaked in is sharp, is a sharp vinegar or something sharp, so then already it could transfer taste within 6 to 18 minutes. So if I have my very sharp chareen, and I have a fleshig spoon, and it makes no difference whether this spoon was used in the last 24 hours or not, sitting in the chareen for 6 minutes straight, without taking it out and putting it back in, it was just sitting there, then if it's a real sharp chareen, so then it will give off a fleshig bliya into the chareen. The chareen cannot be used with, can be used with fish, but it cannot be used with milchig. And again, the one who eats the chareen will not make them fleshig. There's an interesting question that comes up when one goes to a hotel to sit in the lobby on a date or something, and they serve you a cup of Coke and they put the lemon on the Coke. And now when they put the lemon on the Coke, some of that lemon juice drips into the Coke. Now this lemon was cut with a knife. And perhaps this knife is treif. It's a non-kosher hotel. The knife may be treif. And he cuts the lemon with this non-kosher knife. Now lemon is very sour. It's not sharp, but it's sour. And it also has a din like something which is sharp. So when he cuts it, there may be a small bliya of treif now going into my lemon. And then when he puts that piece of lemon on my cup of Coke, there drips a lemon that drip into my Coke. Does that make it that I cannot drink the Coke or not? And the answer is, your Coke is still fine. Just throw the lemon out, the Coke is fine. Why? I'll try to explain it. When in the lemon, the juice is all in pockets. There are pockets of juice. So the knife cut open a few of those pockets. There's a very small amount of treif that went into this lemon. And that small amount, usually, that went into this slice, even if it might have dripped out into your Coke, is butthole in your Coke. Even though now I have a lemony taste, that doesn't bother us because the lemon is kosher. The lemon is kosher. It's the bleas of treif that are in the lemon that I'm not tasting, because that's already lost in the Coke. So therefore, in such a case, it would be fine. If, let's say, I cut this sharp food, I cut the hot pepper with a fleshig knife, So we said now the ha-pepper is considered fleshing and cannot be used with milching. And I go and I put it in my blender, my power of blender, to blend it up. It does not make my blender fleshy. Chatchila, one should definitely use a power of a knife, but a halacha, it does not make my blender fleshy.
Like if you cut a garlic with a fleshy knife and you put it in your blender?
That's right.
So same thing would be, let's say, for mur. If somebody's taking like a piece of mur and wants to put in their food processor and cut
it. That's right, that's a good example, right? Right.
So it wouldn't make it fleshy.
Right. Again, l'chatchila, one should use a power of a knife. But if he did use a fleshy knife and then put it in the blender, it will not make a fleshy. Okay. Now, the next topic that I would like to discuss is making milchige bread or fleshige bread. Chazal, as we learned earlier, are very concerned about us not coming to eat dairy and meat together. And even if it's a small amount, like we said, we wait 6 hours in between fleshig and milchig because perhaps there's a piece of meat stuck between our teeth or perhaps there's some taste of the meat left over there. We're very careful. We said we separate the dishes. We're very careful not to come to a chashash. In the times of Chazal, a lot more than nowadays, and not even so far back, I spoke to older Paiskim, older Yidden, they said, everyone ate bread. There was no such thing sitting down to a supper if you didn't, and then not washing. It was like a little Chazerish to eat a whole meal, you're not going to wash it beforehand. So everyone ate bread. Bread was the main part of the meal. And if one's going to make milchige bread or fleshige bread, and what it means is in the dough itself, I'm mixing milk in the dough itself, or I'm mixing some kind of gravy in the dough itself to make it fleshy. That's what it means, milchige bread or fleshige bread. I'm baking milchige bread or fleshige bread. We're worried that maybe you'll eat some of it, the rest you'll put in the freezer, or in the fridge, or on the side. And then when you come to eat the other type, you're going to come to take the bread, because that's what you're used to, eating bread with every meal. Bread is something that's eaten with every meal. So you're milking your bread, now you're going to be eating with your fleshy, and you'll be eating milchig with fleshy. So that's what they were very worried about. Therefore, they said one should not bake milchig bread or fleshy bread unless you do one of the following two eitzes. Eitze number one is that you're cooking only today, for today, for a meal today, and you're baking enough to use for today's meal. Now you don't have to figure out exactly how much but it has to be reasonable. You made what's reasonable for today. So if tonight is Shavuos, right, Erev Shavuos, I'm baking bread for tonight's meal. We're gonna have a nice milchige meal tonight, and I want to have milchige rolls. So to go bake a whole basket full of milchig rolls, way more than what I need, that you're not allowed to. But if I know I'm having about 10 people, and we need about 15 to 20 rolls, or whatever it may be, so then that I could bake today to be used today. If you're making a shevet brachas, and you're expecting 30 to 40 people to come, so you can bake for that. That's one eitzah. The second eitzah would be to make a siman, to make a type a sim, some kind of sign that this is milchi, this is fleshy, to change the normal way of braiding the challah, braid it somehow differently so that you know that this cannot be eaten with the other type. To take a piece of bread and to make grilled cheese with it, that's not a problem. The bread was baked as bread. Even though now I'm making it milchi, that's not this. This is when it's being baked, either in the dough is mixed, the milk or the fleshig, or in the oven, also as it's being baked, somehow it's becoming milchig or fleshig. But once it was baked as bread, then I could make it fleshig, I could smear on it butter, and I could smear on it some some gravy or something to make it fleshy. That's not the problem. This halacha is by bread. Danishes or pastries that are not usually eaten with meat or milk. So then it's not necessary to make a simin, or you can make as much as you want. There's no problem with to make it milchig or make it fleshy. Because again, what Chazal worried about was, since it's normally eaten with both, at the time when you're eating meat, at the time when you're eating dairy, so that's the issue. If let's say it's something which has cheese on it, it's a bread, you're putting a piece of cheese on the bread. So everyone sees this is flesh, this is milky. So that won't be a problem either. There are certain, the bedat is actually machmer, even by knishes, I think, the berekis, that the milchik have to be square and the power of our, I'm sorry, milchik a triangle and the power of a square, so people know. But again, lefi halacha, one does not have to be machmer on that, because that's not something which is eaten always with milk or meat, yeah.
What if you just made a sign afterwards? Let's say you want to put away the bread and you label it.
It's a good question. That's not enough.
It's not enough?
Chazal was very makbid. That's right. That was a very good point. If I have leftovers, let's say I was expecting 30, 40 people to come for the Sherev Brachas, and I made a reasonable amount, and then it snowed and half the people didn't show up. So I have leftovers, today you can keep. Or if I made a simen, I can keep it as long as I want. But if I baked it without the simin, or not for today's meal, it's asa. Can't even eat it with parif. That's how far Chazal were, or makri. Now, yeah.
Do you bake it? Could you cook it in advance?
Meaning?
Like we're saying, it has to be for the meal that day. You could cook it a week before with an intention.
No. No, that's why even Erev Shavuos for tomorrow also is not allowed. Okay, now I would like to move on to the next topic, which is ovens and microwaves. So there's two ideas that we have to become familiar with. One is called Zeya. Zeya means steam. Steam, the steam that comes from food, has a halachic, we view it in halacha as the food itself. It's an extension of the food, and it's the food. However, there are a few conditions in order for that steam to be able to create a problem. First, the steam has to come with force. It can't be just fluffy. When you open the pot, that initial steam that comes out could burn someone. That's force. After that initial steam, the rest of the steam is just, it's not going to create a problem. It has to be very hot. The steam has to be very hot. It's coming force, has to be very hot, and has to be very hot when it's hitting the other thing. We'll give different examples. And it's only from liquid type foods that come to a boil. Something which is dry, that doesn't have liquid to come to a boil, will not create zeya. There won't be any zeya. So if a case that comes up on Shabbos sometimes, the challah is burning, I want to add hot water to the challah, right? I can't add cold water because that would be bishul. I want to add some hot water. So I have two choices. Either I could go to the hot water urn, fill up a cup and go straight to the pot and pour it into the pot. If it's a pot, I have to take off the fire first, pour it in, then put it back on the fire. Or I could bring the pot to the hot water urn and pour hot water from the urn directly into the pot. So if I'm going to hold the pot underneath the hot water urn and then take the cup off right then, that initial steam comes, is very hot, comes with force, will hit the spout and could create a blia. And then you'll have to kasha the spout or the whole thing. However, if I open the pot before I brought it there, seeing that there's some steam coming up, that's not going to create a blia. That won't create a blia. I have to worry when I pour the water in that nothing splashes and hits the outward urn. But that steam itself won't create a bleed. Now, like we said, steam, the zeya, will only come from a liquid type food. However, there's something else called, the second idea is called reach. Reach somewhat means an aroma, a smell. There's something there. And that could even be from a dry food. There's a question in the Pesachim if reach creates a bli or not. Therefore, to go ahead and put into my oven two foods that are dry, one's fleshy and one's milchy, we don't do that. Open, uncovered. So uncovered, we don't do that because even though they're dry and there's no zeya, there's no steam, but because of reach, we don't do that. So two open, we don't do it. If let's say one of them is covered completely, even though the other one's uncovered, so then this should not be a problem. However, again, it could get a little not so safe if you're doing milchay and fleshy at the same time in the oven. May not be so suggested. So therefore, bottom line is as follows. When we have one oven, and the same thing is true with a microwave, I have one microwave. One should make a decision what I want to use this microwave or oven for. Let's say my decision is for fleshy. So fleshy, I'm going to use the oven or the microwave for fleshy, uncovered and covered, whatever I want. If I need to use this microwave for milchik, so then I will only use it for milchik covered. If once in a while I do need to use the oven for milchik uncovered, so then what one could do is make sure to clean it out, that there's no fleshig schmutz around. Clean it with an oven cleaner. What's burnt is burnt. And then you turn on the highest for a half an hour, and then you could do your milchik uncovered, and then again kasher it, clean it out, and turn on the highest for half an hour before you put back to fleshy.
This is for a microwave also?
Yeah.
How do you turn on microwave on to the highest?
So, I'm sorry. For a microwave, the kashering of a microwave will be that you have to make sure it's clean by the vents, clean by the fan, and then you take a container of water, and you put it in there until the microwave steams up, which, depending on how good your microwave is, how long will it take for it to steam up.
For an oven, you don't have to wait 24 hours?
So it's definitely, you're right, it's definitely better to wait 24 hours between that milching and fleshy. However, if it doesn't work, l'chatchila one should. So again, so l'chatchila, like this, l'chatchila one should set up their oven or their microwave that either fleshy or milchik they're going to use for covered and uncovered. And then the other type they're only going to use for covered. If someone's working at work where there's a geisha place, and they have a microwave over there, if you get those good containers that stay shut, they don't pop open, you can warm your food up in the microwave also. It's closed, sealed shut. So that's if once in a while one needs to use the oven or the microwave for the other type, so then what you'll do is wait 24 hours. The chatchili should wait 24 hours definitely, and then clean it out, and then kasher it. The oven by turning it on the highest for half an hour, the microwave with a container of water, and that's the best thing to do. As a suggestion, many people what they do is they use the oven, let's say for fleshy, and they get a big toast oven, and that's usually enough for whatever milchik they want to make, and then everything's separated. You don't have to worry that. Now, when it comes to parrot food, you could make in your oven. Let's say my oven's for fleshy. I just made chicken uncovered. As long as I take the chicken out, even if it's still hot from the chicken, and I have dry parrot like challah, cake, cookies, dry, I could put it in, and I'll still be able to eat it with milk. There's no problem.
Eat it with milk.
Yeah. It's dry. There's no zeya. There's no issue.
Isn't cake batter?
Is it better?
It doesn't come to a boil. Right, again, liquid.
Is it to double wrap the milk in, like a lasagna, to double wrap it?
The reason for the double wrapping is because a lot of times the single wrapping opens, and then you create a real problem in your oven. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say. But if it's wrapped once well, mm-hmm. It's true. It's definitely safer to double wrap it.
So do that
in
the chaskela, the double wrap, and the fish, you can make sure it's okay?
Yeah.
Also, like, if you just, let's say, bake chicken, and then you bake rolls right afterwards, you could eat those rolls with butter?
Yeah.
And the cake or cookies with coffee.
It's a big cash here.
What about liquid?
What?
What about, like, liquid or things that are, like, more...
If it's liquidy, if it comes to a boil, then you have to wait. Then what will happen is, the steam of the liquid will pull out the bleeds of the fresh bleeds, the flesh. Right? Let's say
so
you
can't eat it with milk.
Again, we'll go back to the rules you learned last week, that if the oven was used within the last 24 hours for a hot fleshig, so then this will have, this part of a liquidy thing will have a din of fleshig that cannot eat it with milk. It won't make me fleshig. Zeya will never make you fleshig, but you cannot eat it with milk. If it was not used within the last 24 hours, so then, and you make this liquidy thing in there, so then l'chetchila, you should not mix it with the other type. But if you did mix it already, or you have leftovers, like we said last week, you'll be able to, yeah.
So
just apply the rules of last week to
so
you.
So for dry, it's not a problem.
Dry is not a problem.
Right, so any dry thing, you don't have to tell anyone that you made in a fleshig oven, you could totally...
As long as they're lying around the wiener. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's say you have like a pot of something milk, like, say macaroni or whatever, and it's not covered. You're mixing with the cheese. There is zeya coming up. So you have to like be careful with spices or ketchup oils or anything about the zeya.
That's a good question. I think practically there's nothing to worry about. It's definitely safer. Again, it's definitely safer if you put the spices in here and then throw it into the pot. But if you picture it, I'm holding the spice over the pot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the zeya goes straight. The zeya doesn't go to the side. It goes straight up, right? So I'm holding it crooked. It's going up. There's the holes that are there. There's the spices coming out of it. The zeya can't get in there. Maybe a tiny drop flipped in through the hole on top, it's going to be bottled in whatever you're doing. So I can't imagine it's a problem.
Ketchup?
Yeah, you're squeezing it out. The hole is stuffed with ketchup coming out. How's any zeya going to get in there? What? It's usually like a little sealed. I'm saying, again, a safer is definitely safer. You're right. Definitely safer to have to pour it into something else first and then put it into your pot. I agree. If the zeya gets on the bottle, and then you touch it afterwards, and touch the bottle, and then you touch the milchig food, that could be an issue. So of course, you're definitely safer. Did you run into a problem if you did it? I don't think so. What do you think?
Okay. Separate
milk, ketchup bottle. We have it. Anyone has kids at home, then, or a husband at home, then you probably need it because either way, it ends up in the food. Right?
No, I went to someone's house and she has separate fleshig milchig and par and spices.
Whoa.
So that's not necessary.
Again, safety if they want.
Right.
Also, the steam isn't that hot. Then it's like, by the time it gets in here, it's not. You have to let it run off.
Right. So it won't create a bleed in the bottle, but if it gets in, that's what they're worried about.
But Rebbe Winter say that only the first time that you open up the pot or the oven,
that will create a bleed, right. Right, but if some of that steam ends up slipping in, maybe that'll be a problem. But again, I can't imagine it should be a problem. But you know, the kitchen and I do, yeah.
So if you, I just want to make sure, if you cook like half your muffins in your like little toaster and half in your fleshig oven, it's totally fine to.
The muffins apart, right?
Yeah.
And
there's not enough room in your toaster, so you put half.
A toast oven you have to be more careful about, because at least I think a toast oven has a lot of times milchiga. Cheese, this spills over and it's not as clean and it's not burnt. It doesn't get hot and so hot that it burns whatever's there.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be careful that what you're putting the muffins in might touch the milchig, and then the milchig cheese, which is sitting on, gives a bli off.
No.
So I, in a toast oven, I would be more careful of that.
So how would I
say?
How would I?
If the toast oven's clean, then it's fine.
And what if they're not cooked in metal? They're cooked in, what's it called?
Silicon.
Yeah. Is that a problem?
No, again, you definitely, if it's clean, then it's fine. No problem.
And if the rack is clean, but on the bottom, there's like the dripping rack. Is that a problem?
So if there's no liquid, there won't be a problem. If on the bottom there's no liquid, then it won't be a problem. Okay, now a stove top.
Wait,
yeah.
Sorry. What about fish and meat being baked in the oven at the same time? I've been told recently it's a big issue. Like a filter fish and chicken being baked in the oven at the same time.
So, and they're both open.
Or maybe one open, one closed.
If one is closed, there's absolutely no problem. If they're both open, so then you have to be careful that one doesn't splash something into the other. It's like a little not in your control.
Is there zeya with fish and meat?
If they're dry again. If there's liquid, then there's zeya.
The filter fish has tons of liquid, let's say, in the
right, plate. Right.
So it's a problem.
But it's covered.
It's, right,
it's covered.
Okay, it's covered, then it's not a problem. Doing better. If they're not covered, then better
the
not to be.
Salmon's uncovered and the chicken is
salmon,
uncovered.
Salmon, right.
Or they're both uncovered.
If they have liquid.
And the chicken has liquid probably, yeah.
Chicken has liquid. So it's my stomach better not to. But if someone called me up right before Shabbos and they did it, I probably would let it go through.
Could you eat that fish with a melted meal?
Yeah.
And if there's liquid in the fish, you should cover the fish, even if it's in the oven by itself?
No, wait, one thing. With the fish that was, well, in the oven, same time as the chicken.
With the covered chicken.
I can eat it at a milchig meal, but don't eat it with milchig itself.
On the same plate.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Because it was cooked with fish.
Are you allowed to put open fish in the oven, gefilte fish in the oven, in water, if it's in a fleshig oven, or are you sure?
Yeah, it's not wrong.
If
it's like cooking it in a fleshig pot. Right. Okay, yeah? Stovetops? Okay, stovetops. A stovetop has the burners, the grates, the pots. Tell me what most of us, I think, have. And then you have the floor of the stovetop. Now, in general, we view the floor of the stovetop as treif, because milchik spills over, fleishik spills over, and many times oil spritzes out and hits it. So it's like a mixture of bleis here in the floor of the stovetop. Which means that if I'm frying schnitzel and one of the schnitzels flip out and hit and landed on the stovetop, so then you don't have to throw away those schnitzels, but you'll have to cut off, it depends how thick your schnitzel is, but you'll have to cut off a piece that hit the bottom of the schnitzel. Or if something else lands on it, we'll have to treat it as if it touched something which is not kosher.
What do you cut over? It doesn't make your knife...
Let it cool off first and then cut it.
So if you have like macaroni pieces that like fell out of the pot and like you've eaten them before, that's a problem?
It's probably, again, it's safer not to. Okay. So that's the floor of the stovetop. The burners itself, we consider kosher because we view the fire that's underneath the pot, that it burns, it's constantly doing liban, it's kashrin the grates. So therefore, if something spills over, you should clean the grate. Don't wait until the fire burns it up, because if you put down, if let's say something milchik spilled over on the grate, and then I put my fleishig pot on it, before the fire gets a chance to burn up that milchik stuff, it's creating a heat, which may send the bli into your fleishig pot. Therefore, if you see something spilled over, clean it. However, if nothing spilled over, we use the same grates for fleishig and milchik. Some people are makbet, they have two separate stove tops, but one does not need to be makbet on that. Generally, we use them for both.
If for sure the food got cleaned up, then... I mean, if, like, let's say something spilled on the grate, and you finish cooking whatever, and then a day later you want to cook something lachuk. Is that a problem if you never cleaned it?
If it was it's still there?
Yeah, it got burned down.
It got burned. Anything that got burnt is no longer.
Could you assume it got burnt if you continue cooking?
Probably. Yeah.
Stuff?
I mean, again, most times. Yeah.
So if something falls like right under the pot that you're cooking with, could you assume that the fire burns? It's not. It's
you probably
not,
could.
It's not on the grate, it's on the oven, but is that close enough to the fire to assume that it's kosher?
Probably, but the food probably will catch on fire now. Someone suggested
well,
it fall
so
over
close.
There.
So, like, a lot of times
so it then it's very
food.
Not so close.
Right, so that's a problem.
It's close enough that the fires
mm-hmm.
then all get burnt.
Right.
And I have grilled schnitzel instead. Okay.
If the grates are kosher, we said, right? But are you allowed to take your pot cover and put it down? Like, let's say I have a pot of chicken soup and then I take the cover of my pot and I put it directly on.
Okay, so last week we learned, this is a good question. Last week we learned that if you have two pots, one's fleshy, one's milchy, and they're very hot, they're cooking on the fire and they hit each other, they touch each other. If there's no liquid between them, there won't be a problem. So it really depends if there's condensation or there's liquid in there, or if the grate is dirty from something, then there could be an issue. If they're both dry, it won't be any issue.
Probably not dry because it has condensation.
So then probably it's not suggested to do it. But at the end of the day, condensation is not enough to make a problem, but still it's probably suggested not to do that.
To put it down at all? Or
no.
Put it down,
you don't have to hold it all day. But
you either flip it over, right? I'm saying.
You're saying you need to
put it down.
To put it down.
Like you want to stir a soup and you need to put
so
the cover
on
somewhere.
The stove top. Well,
if you put it on the stove top, then it's a problem.
If it's wet.
It is wet.
Only if there's something else
on
the
stove
top.
No, if there's nothing else on the stove top.
Right, what if you're not using the stove top right now?
So then you're right. So if you use the rules, right, if that stove top was not used in the last 24 hours, then you're right, there's no blease.
Well,
oh, right. It would be a problem to even put it down if there's no milk cooking right now.
If milk spilled over on the grate. So now this grate has in it some milchiga fresh blease.
What if it was cleaned?
It was cleaned? And
not burned out, but just you clean the stove top before.
And there's liquid between the cover and the grate?
From the condensation.
You need a little more than that, actually. You need a little more than just the condensation.
So what should you do?
Put that on the counter or put it on a cup. No?
On the
other side.
On
the
counter.
I
thought the counter
was going to be once you put it over.
Depends what
you're putting in.
I
started putting
a towel on my counter. What? Yeah, but you have to
take off the cover.
Is there
a
problem
putting it on like a table? There is. I put a little towel. I'm too scared to check on it. Next
what?
I
can't help. I can't hear. A hot pot for what? Yeah.
So you're doing the cover.
The pot is on the stove.
Right. After it, the pot is on the stove all day. You're going to take it and put it on your pan?
In my dishwasher.
Before you serve it on the stove.
Sounds like they are. Okay, so the suggestion is wherever you're putting the pot, put the cover.
What? No, you know, because you want to, like, serve.
No, what if you're serving?
You're serving from
the
soup,
the
and you can't, like, balance everything.
Put the cover on the counter.
So get your husband out.
You have
him
on the counter.
Right, well, if you don't
bring
him on the counter,
okay. No, so I'm saying, again, if it's just wet from the condensation, not that much, or it's dry, it won't be an issue. If there's some other liquid there, or some food stuck to wherever you're putting it down on, then it could be an issue. That's it. Okay, I just wanted to finish up with sinks and dishwashers, but yeah, question.
I don't think the last week, I don't know if you discussed
okay.
this, but I have a piece of glass on top of my stovetop.
Right.
So if I cook fish and I cook milk, and it like gets like steamy.
And it drips back down.
So,
did you ever see it drip back down?
I never saw it drip back down.
Okay,
but
I don't.
When I do pull it out and clean it, like it moves.
Fine.
Then there was stuff on it.
Till you start seeing it dripping back down, then you don't have to worry about it.
Okay.
I don't think that'll happen here. Maybe in a commercial kitchen more, but not here. And don't eat off it. Okay. Yeah? Should we stop or... Okay, so maybe next week we'll finish up sinks, dishwashers, then we can go into other halachas that negate in the kitchen, like blood spots and eggs, leaving certain foods overnight, and freshes challah, and similar things. Okay? Yes.
Did we say that you don't need to have the two different salt shakers, like not for the table? Like, please should get machlokes because there's no zeah unless it's
right, there. Right.
I mean, honestly,
again, by the table, you have to know. Sometimes people with greasy hands touch, and then by the other type, you touch it and could get onto the food. Or sometimes you hit the food with the salt shaker. I'm saying, you're definitely safer, again, to have two separate. I don't
like
think
you,
it's
let's
so...
Let's say now I want to start having two separate ones, but for a long time I didn't.
Then don't worry about that. You don't have to do tshuva for that.
No, I mean, that's why I have to throw out the salt shaker and start.
Yeah, don't worry. Have a good night. Yeah.